Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Thanks very much for joining me today, Rob.
Thanks for having me again, Steve.
All right. Well, significant developments, certainly protests across Russia yesterday for the second time since Alexei Navalny returned to Russia on January 17th from Germany, where he was treated after a nerve agent poisoning he blames on President Vladimir Putin and was promptly jailed upon return. And for the second time, a harsh crackdown as well, with police using force and detaining thousands of people, more than 5,000. And upcoming events, tomorrow, on Tuesday, February 2nd, Navalny faces a court hearing that could potentially result in a 3.5-year prison term. And that's something he has not, he's never actually been sent to prison for a long period of time. He spent a lot of time in jail on shorter term incarcerations. Let's talk about Sunday's protests first. Hard to estimate the turnout because the state took so many measures in advance to keep people away. And then detained many very quickly. But I would say not small, certainly, tens of thousands of people across the country. And the crackdown may have been even tougher than on January 23rd. There were more arrests and some harrowing scenes of police violence. Rob, what's your main takeaway or your top few takeaways from yesterday's protests and the state response?
It's really hard to say. I'm interested in the fact that even after 2 weeks of protests and the statements around the protests, we don't really have a good sense of how important this is, whether it's an inflection point for Russia or not. And I think that's a little bit strange. When I look back on history, I see the 2005 protests against when they tried to take away the in-kind benefits. There was a lot of energy in the country. The ruling elites were really fractured, and that was a really dangerous moment for Putin's rule, I think. In 2012, the Bolotnaya protests also, it seemed they had a different kind of focus and energy than the protests that we're seeing now. Now a lot of the protesters are out there not so much to support Navalny, but to express all sorts of vague dissatisfactions about the pandemic restrictions, the economic impact of the pandemic. There's a few on the reports of corruption, but it really is a strange sort of protest, I think. Another big takeaway, I would say, though, is the organization of the authorities' response. I think that since the establishment of the National Guard, I forget which year that was, but a few years back,
yes.
They've definitely been training, they've been coordinating, they've been working on how to contain these protests in advance and in a much more impressive way than in the past. And I think it really shows they've improved their tactics, I think, more significantly than the protesters have improved their tactics.
So it's an uphill battle, I guess, or an uneven field out there. I guess one of my takeaways would be, I agree, just the breadth of it. Obviously the protests a few years ago over pension reform, raising the retirement age, were quite widespread. But these they do seem, sustained protests over 2 weeks in many, many cities across the country. I do think, obviously the outcome in the long run is unclear. But I think that maybe just whatever happens with the protests, whether they're able to sustain these numbers or not, to me there is a bit of a change in that it just seems like this puts an additional burden, additional challenge to the Kremlin going into the State Duma elections, which are due in September, and then also 2024. It's a little hard to say right now. It's only February 1st, but I do feel like this kind of the profile of the opposition, the profile of of just the number of people who are dissatisfied. You know, it just seems to like add to the challenges for Putin, United Russia ahead of those elections, regardless.
That's definitely true, Steve. But I think from the point of view of the government, they're glad to have this crisis unfolding now in January rather than, say, in August when on the eve of the elections. I think I'm not sure about the timing of Navalny forcing this conflict now.
Right, and that was one of the questions of, you know, why did he choose to return? I mean, he obviously made it clear all along that he would return, you know, once he recovered, but his return was somewhat abrupt and unexpected, you know, and yes, you know, it's the question of would there have been more momentum or more oomph kind of going into it if they were starting in the summer. So we'll see. I mean, I guess it'll depend in part on what does happen with the protests and other things as well. And now, you know, going into tomorrow's court hearing, Navalny's his current term behind bars is actually scheduled to end in about 2 weeks. It's just a custody measure. But tomorrow, Moscow court is scheduled to hold a hearing on a Russian prison services call, which has now been supported today, I think, by the prosecutors, not unexpectedly, of course, for Navalny to be imprisoned for allegedly violating parole while serving his 3.5-year suspended sentence in a previous case, the Yves Rocher case, as it's called, which he contends was fabricated in the first place. So they're calling, the law enforcement's calling for that to be converted into an actual prison sentence. Now, Navalny and his backers say the parole violation claim is absurd because he was out of the country recovering from a poisoning that evidence suggests was carried out by the Russian state. So, you know, how could he have, you know, gone to speak to his parole officer or whatever the administrative detail is there? Now, I'd say Putin's 21 years or so in power have been defined to a large extent by court cases in which the widespread assumption is that the outcome is handed down by the Kremlin. There was the Khodorkovsky case, of course, the most famous. There's always a lot of guessing, and that can be a fool's game. But I must say, to me, it seems like almost everything the state has done so far since Navalny's return suggests that he is likely to be handed a prison sentence. Rob, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this.
I agree. I mean, definitely Navalny is going to be sidelined for the election season that's coming up this summer and fall, one way or another. How they do that is a open question. I think we were talking before about the protests, how the police response has, the security forces response has been more sophisticated than ever before. And I think Russia, the Putin administration is also getting more sophisticated at the way that they use the courts to tie up the opposition and to create the impression that there's the rule of law, because you can never really tell for sure what the sentence is going to be, but then the prosecutors appeal the sentence anyway, and the person is held, and you know, the defendant is held, and the court goes on. Look what they've done to historian Yuri Dmitriev in Karelia.
Yeah,
excuse me. In Karelia, I mean, for years that case has been going on, and he's been, you know, completely tied up by it, and so that sort of thing is interesting as well. Whether they decide to send Navalny back to prison, or whether they or to prison, I should say, or whether they just keep him under house arrest as the trial goes on and on and on interminably, you know, it's hard to say.
Right. I mean, it's unclear. They sort of have a range of options, really. I mean, on the one hand, I mean, again, sort of overthinking this probably, but on the one hand, if they did not sentence him to prison now, did not convert the suspended sentence into a real prison sentence, you know, that would obviously ease the pressure from abroad. You know, I think the EU is waiting to some degree on this decision before deciding about sanctions. And you know, as you said, it might, but then they could presumably keep him, you know, under house arrest, or, you know, jail him again for short periods of time and keep him busy until you know, through the election. So in some ways, but I feel that in some ways, you know, in 2013, I guess it was, he was initially sentenced to 5 years in prison on another case that he says is fabricated. And then after protests, he was freed. They reversed their decision, essentially, and that sentence was converted into a suspended one. I feel like this time, if the court was to do that, you know, the Kremlin would sort of expose itself to, or would feel that it was being perceived as acting because they were afraid of imprisoning him. So, in this atmosphere, you know, I'm not sure that that's going to happen. But of course, you know, I really have no idea. You know, I'm just basing my, I guess, guesses on past experience. So that's as far as it goes.
In the past case that you mentioned, it's worth noting that they did jail his brother, Oleg, and held him for the entire prison time. Exactly. And so they sort of had that as a hostage situation almost.
Right, exactly. And that's, yes, a hostage situation. And that's another kind of option that they have, you know, and that they keep using in cases like this is, you know, the family, and that sort, and other, of course, he has his allies, he has his team of people working with him across the country. So, you know, they have that as a lever as well. So, you know, again, hard to predict what's going to happen, but this story isn't going away. I guess we're running out of time. We'll wrap it up for today. Rob, thanks very much for joining me. Good insights.
Thanks for having me again. It was a pleasure.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.